When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello and welcome to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and Dr. Mark Goulston, psychiatrist and coach. And Mark, this week we have a very special guest with us again, don't we?
Absolutely. I'm so pleased to see Jeff Dewing again. And he was on my podcast, My Wake Up Call. And he's a revolutionary tech innovator. He's the author of the global number one best-selling business book, Doing the Opposite. He's the podcast host of Business Disruptors, Doing the Opposite. He's the founder of Cloud FM and Mindset, and their tech has disrupted a £200 billion industry, and they've been named the Queen's Award winner for Innovation 2019 and a global leader in the Internet of Things enabled predictive maintenance by Gartner. He left school at 16. And what'd you say? He's from the East End
of London. Yeah.
East End of London. And we got to know each other. And why I thought of bringing him up on the podcast is he discovered the power of vulnerability quite remarkably. And it kind of shifted things around. So I want to share something with you, Jeff, and JJ. I'm not going to share what you think I'm going to share, but something I'm trying to teach the world is whoever I'm with, I try to bathe them in utter delight. So when I have someone on a podcast or I'm seeing you again, Jeff, and as ever, JJ, I'm just so glad that you're here with us. I mean, just, and I'm wanting the world to see that we can all do that to waiters, waitresses, people who serve us. And when you give people a taste of utter delight, and a lot of men will say, well, what does that look like? It's when you come home and nobody talks to you and your dog comes up to you and looks in your eyes and you look into your dog's eyes. That is utter delight.
I know you talked about that before, and it is a wonderful thing if you can do that. But Jeff, I mean, I'm curious about a couple of things. One is your book, Doing the Opposite. I really want to hear a bit more about that. But also, you got to a very low point at one point, didn't you? But you managed to turn your life around and have become such a successful businessman. Tell us a little bit about that journey and how vulnerability played into that.
Well, it's really interesting because when you start on these journeys, you don't know what you don't know. So you're on this journey of discovery. And typically we're all wired the same way through parenting, school, education, all the sort of the same framework has been applied. And I guess when you look at, I saw some images a few years ago where it shows how the business environment has changed and the health service has changed and technology has come involved. But yet when you look at a photograph of a classroom in a school, it's exactly the same today as it was in 1920.
Oh, yeah.
So it's the education system. Not that I'm suggesting that I want to be critical of it, but one of the things is I always refer to this, that we're A child is born with two fears. And most people struggle to tell you what those fears are, but the two fears are falling backwards and loud noise. Every other fear that we have has been wired into us during our journey, which means you can unwire it. But the question is that when you can learn to sort of control the way you think and how you feel and how you react and what's important, you can really start to shape and take control of your mind, which then takes control of everything. And I guess my journey really is that we're wired to be the people that leave school, whether we've got qualifications or we haven't got qualifications. And we're wired to say, you need to get a job for life. And it used to be in the banking industry. I'm going to be there for 50 years and stuff like that. These are all the things we're told. We're told to buy a house. We're told to, you know, build a family. We're told to get a nice car. We're told to not be in debt. All these things we're told is what we need. But until you actually go on this journey of discovery, where you'll have people that are slightly more ambitious than others, and that gears the risk of which you're prepared to take. And of course, there's also the ego that comes into play. You know, how do you justify your existence? How do you show the world that you know, you can do something bigger or better than somebody else? And of course, it takes a long time unless you're lucky enough to have some great people around you that really help you find your North Star. Because in the absence of that, which is, I think, is the majority, people don't know their North Star. They're trying to find their North Star. They don't even know they're looking for their North Star. And we all behave in the way which we're taught. And that is, you know, you command and control. It's all about, if I own a business, I must be cleverer than anybody else in the room. And all these things we're wired to believe are true. And it's not until you get to perhaps the experience and the wisdom and the knowledge, and more importantly, the failure that you have to go through to realize that, you know what, we've been getting this wrong. And if someone said to me, why do you think that you have the feeling you do today? Why do you think lots of businesses have the feeling? And I attribute it to the people that are changing the world and teaching us the things we've been getting wrong for 50, 60, 70 years are millennials and Gen Zs. They've come in and said, what on earth are you lot doing? And I'm thankful for that, because that they've really helped us realize that we've been getting it wrong. And I get challenged when I do a lot of keynotes. I get challenged by, I say command and control doesn't work. It never has worked. And then people say, but there are lots of businesses out there that have been very successful with command and control. And I say, yes, you can't argue. But they'd have been more successful if they weren't. And so my journey has been delivering the things that I was taught were the things I needed to deliver. I need to be successful. I need to be seen to be successful. And I was told that you're not allowed to make mistakes. You're judged if you get it wrong. You're judged if you make errors. You're frowned upon if you make errors. And as a result of that, that creates an environment where you cover up the errors that you've learned you've made. And you don't necessarily learn from them, because you're too busy telling everyone it hasn't happened. And then before you know who you are, you hit a brick wall and the errors just all come flooding out because you can't hide anymore. And then you hit rock bottom, which is what happened to me. I lost everything. I built a big business, enjoyed it, loved it, lived like kings. And then because you weren't prepared to be honest and vulnerable and ask for help, the bricks came tumbling down. And as a result, I was looking after my wife and my three children at the time, three girls that were under the age of 8. And I couldn't afford to go and buy a loaf of bread. That's how bad it got. And as a result of that, it wasn't until I wrote my book that people that have known me for years had no idea about my story, no idea at all. And they were more taken aback by reading the book of someone they'd known for 20 years and had no idea about this story. But suddenly they reached out and said, wow, that is, of course, they didn't have to ask me any more detail because all of the details in the book. And they said, but we had no idea. I said, I know, because you know, we were wired to not share this information. We were wired to not talk about this sort of stuff. And it sent me on a journey of discovery where I went hiding probably for 2 years. You know, I wouldn't come out of the house. I was ashamed to walk anywhere. I was embarrassed. I'd let my family down, my wife down. And as much as she was trying to be supportive and say, Jeff, don't worry, we'll be fine, we'll get it sorted, it didn't stop me feeling the way I felt. In fact, it made me feel worse because she was being so supportive. And And then eventually one day, I just learned the art of reflection. I just looked back on what had happened. And there was no real key moment. Podcasts weren't about in them days and stuff like that where you could. And I was never a reader because as soon as my mind slows down, I go to sleep. So unless it's completely active. So I could never really read without falling asleep. So I just one day said, I've got to stop this feeling sorry for myself stuff. I've got to do something about it. So that's when I decided, you know what? Because when you run a business, one of the things you'll say is I'll never work for anybody again because I'm in control of my destiny and so on and so on. And I just said, stop all that nonsense. You've got to go back into work because not because you need to earn a living, although that was one reason, but you need to go and learn all the things you clearly didn't know before. So I went on a journey for 6 years working for various businesses right the way up to the corporate world with one aim and one aim alone, and that was to learn. And at some point, there was no plan at that point, I'm going to start a business again. The journey was I need to learn. And then at some point during that journey, maybe I'll start a business, maybe I won't. And then after 6-7 years, I went, okay, now I'm ready to go again. I've learned the lessons that I clearly didn't know before. So that's pretty much the story.
Wow. And I relate to so much of that because it is something that's ingrained in us that we are not supposed to admit any vulnerability or to admit that anything's wrong in our lives. And I used to do exactly the same thing. I would come up from London to Scotland and see the family. And my father would say, how are you doing? You know, work doing well? And say, yeah, great. And everything in my life might have been falling around me, but I would still say, yeah, everything's fine. Everything's great.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, everything really does fall apart, doesn't it? But that vulnerability, I think it's taken me a long, long time to learn that. It's really important. Yeah. Mark,
let me ask each of you, when you let people care about you, you know, whether it was your family, Jeff, or people around you, JJ, have you discovered that there's a number of people who want to care about you and that you're not burdening them to have them care about you? You know, it seems to me that a lot of people want to care about others, and they like that opportunity. Did either of you discover that? I'm vulnerable. Why don't I just let other people see it? I mean, did either of you discover the power of letting people care about you?
Well, I certainly did. I'll give you a couple of real life examples. Well, I'll give you one real life example and one scenario I used when I learned the power. So I said to, when I do these keynotes, I say to people, I said, so just imagine there's me and you standing outside the front of a building, the office, and we're having a chat about stuff. And an old lady walks past us and she falls over. What do we do? First thing we do is we run up and we help the old lady, right? Because she's vulnerable, she's fallen over, she's upset, she's hurt herself, she's embarrassed, all those things. So we run over and we help her and we make her feel good about herself. Don't worry, you okay? Is everything okay? Blah, blah, blah. So the reality is we all know as human beings that you'd have to travel a long way to find somebody that said, no, I wouldn't go and pick her up, because everybody would go and pick her up, right? So therefore, one of the things the reason I did it in the keynote is I say, so when you're meeting and speaking to people in your office, and you're saying, how's things? They're going, everything's okay. If you can't see they've fallen over because they've not physically fallen over, you have no idea. So you don't obviously help them. You don't need to. There's no need for that. So we created a thing in our business, which I also use in life, which is called the sign-in. And it basically means that you have a chat with the group of people you're in and you say, listen, we have three columns, work, personal, and health. And all I want you to do is tell me how you feel today in the moment. 10 is I'm on top of the world, punching the air. 1 is I'm in trouble and I'm depressed. And you've got to give me a number. But you don't have to tell me why, but you have to give me a number. And the way it works is that after you've done it one or two sessions, people are more than happy because you're in a trusting environment and people will share why. But if you forget that for a moment, just assume they don't. When someone says, well, work, I'm feeling like a 2. Personal, I'm feeling like a 7. And health, I'm feeling like a 6. Okay, why is that? I'd rather not say it. That's okay. But I already now know they've just fallen over in front of me. So I'm going to spend some time with them. Right? Anybody's going to spend, because no one, anyone sees a two says, I can't leave you on your own with a two. That simple gives the opportunity to see someone falling over without physically falling over. And then the real life example I'll give you is I was playing with my grandkids about in March time. And I got an electric scooter and the grandkids said to me, I bet you can't do a 360-degree turn on your scooter, Granddad. So me being me, man, testosterone, I've got to rise to the bet, right? So I do a 360-degree turn. They said, I bet you can't do it again. So I do it again, and this time I fall off, and I fracture my knee. And I'm laying on the floor. Now, what men usually do in that environment through embarrassment is they'll jump up, pretend everything's okay, no matter how much pain they're in, because they don't want the fuss made, they want to see that they're strong, whatever. Because of what I'd learned, Mark, in the podcast we'd done before then, The Power of Vulnerability, they come to me, I said, no, I think I'm really hurt here. I would never have done that before. I'd have pretended everything was okay. So that's, we all behave that way. So when you talk about, do you want people to care about you? The answer will always be, well, yes, I do want people to care about me. The question is, how are you going to make it easy for them to care for you? That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, and I think that that really is the crux of the matter, isn't it? How are you going to let people do it? And I know from my point of view, I was quite happy often to be vulnerable with friends, but with family, it was a completely other matter. That was very, I mean, until quite late in life, I wasn't able to. And even then, I didn't really get any of the support that I might have wanted emotionally anyway. And it's family stuff can be really quite toxic as well. You know, it can be very, very difficult to be vulnerable if you've been brought up in a certain environment. But yeah, certainly with friends, absolutely.
But that's the key word for me. The key word is environment,
yeah,
which essentially is culture. And, yeah. And if you are in a toxic environment, you will become toxic. If you're in an aggressive environment, you'll become aggressive. If you're in a loving environment, you become loving. You will become your environment. And that's why they talk about, you know, mixing with the wrong people and all this sort of stuff. You will, and you are influenced by your environment, unless, of course, you're strong enough to realize it's a bad environment, I'm getting out. But at the same time, you can also change, improve, or adjust that environment. The question is, how passionate are you about doing that? So when you imagine family, if it was friends, I'd say, well, you're the wrong type of friend. So you walk away from that because you don't want to be drawn from the energy, and that's okay. With family, it takes a lot more effort because, not a lot more effort, what I'm trying to say is, it's a lot more important that you try to improve the environment. And the way that I do that now, which has been very successful, although I couldn't do it 25, 30 years ago because I just didn't understand it, we're back to how do you let people care about you? So if you're coming to a situation where it's really important that you want to hold the family together and be great, you let them care for you by simply saying, look, I'm not going to agree or disagree or tell you you're right or you're wrong, but I need to tell you how you've just made me feel.
Yeah.
You've made me feel this way. And just that sort of behavior is vulnerability. And you can't negotiate my feelings. You can't negotiate how I feel. But if you want me to feel better, then we need to be, you know, we need to talk to each other differently. And before you know where you are in that environment, suddenly people feel less threatened to adjust. Whereas if you're sitting there saying, you're wrong, you shouldn't have said this, you shouldn't have said that, you shouldn't do this, you're creating this confrontation. So what I've found the most powerful is this is how you just made me feel, and let them take ownership of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great tip. And on that note, we'll be talking more about that in a moment. But right now, we're just going to take a short break and hear these messages from our station sponsors. We're back right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More on UK Health Radio. Here with me, JJ, practical alchemist, Dr. Mark Goulston, and our guest today, Jeff Dewing. And Jeff, you were making some really great points before the break there. Mark, I think you wanted to expand a little bit more on vulnerability.
Yeah, maybe we can share anecdotes about vulnerability and what it does. I'll share one. Years ago, I almost died. I had a perforated colon. I had emergency surgery, and I had a colostomy, you know, a bag. And I came from a background, probably that you could relate to it from East London, but I came from a background where my father would say, "I'd rather be dead than have a bag on me." You know, that really educated thing. Yeah. And so I remember the pain went away, and I had this little thing attached to me. And I thought, I'm doing really well. And, you know, this is not so bad. And I'm different from my dad. And then one night I had an accident, fell off in the bedroom. And then it dawned on me. I mean, it just dawned on me, the vulnerability. And I just started sobbing. And my wife, she just looked over at me and said, "It's okay, we'll clean it up." And to this day, when I want to, in my mind, hear that my wife has an angel's voice occasionally towards me, very occasionally, but I can still remember it. I mean, when she said it, "It's okay, we'll clean it up." Yeah. But it was an amazing experience, because there I was, raw, exposed, my deceased dad saying, "See, I told you so." But I just wanted to share that. I don't know if either of you have had experiences where, you know, the jig is up. I mean, I guess I've lost control.
I mean, I was looking after my mother in the last years of her life. And she was a very proud woman and a bit of a narcissist as well. But, you know, she was very infirm. Towards the end of her life, she was in her late 90s when she finally passed, and she had developed an incontinence. Now, for somebody who's so proud and so, you know, "I'll do this myself, I don't need anybody," it was very difficult for her, just following on from what you were talking about, very, very difficult for her to accept that this, you know, she needed help and definitely needed help with something like that. It was almost like a lesson in reverse for me, to realize that, you know, that might be the worst thing that she felt could happen to her at that point. But really, it was nothing for me to help her. I mean, it was something, but, you know, really, in the scheme of things, nothing very much for me to help her. But it was huge for her. Massive for her. She was mortified, and sadly was, I think, the reason why she very rarely went out towards the last days of her life, because she was too scared to do so, too scared in case there was an accident and she'd be in public and it would be awful. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and of course, I think we can all relate to that sort of story, can't we? And yeah. Certainly for experience we've had with our parents or our nans and granddads, I think the same thing, because we've been wired to be proud, in control, and, you know, resilient. When in reality, this is like the typical swan, isn't it? You know, all you see is the top bit, but you don't see the fast pedaling underneath.
Yeah.
And I guess a similar scenario from my perspective, which I shared with Mark before, and that was that our business had just hit COVID. We was in the restaurant industry and every restaurant had closed. We were a business collecting 6.5-7 million sterling per month in revenue. I got 400 mouths to feed, and suddenly it fell off a cliff down to about £200,000 a month. And we were in that zone of not knowing what was going on. There was points there were people thinking this is going to wipe out the population, let alone whether we're going to have a salary or not. So there was so much uncertainty and fear. I had made the decision with my exec team that if there was one thing we had to do better than anything, and that was communicate. And we always say the three most important words in business: communicate, communicate, communicate. And so we was having conversations with lots of people that were very fearful themselves. Am I going to have a job? And, you know, am I going to survive? This is before furlough came out. And we just said, we're going to talk to the people every week without fail in a live broadcast where they can ask questions. And we're going to tell them everything we know. We're going to tell them everything we don't know. But it's going to be absolute warts and all. And on the first speech I did, or the first address that I did, I had a script that was there to give me sort of guidance on the messages I wanted to get across. But I started going through this thing, and after about sentence three, I lost my way. I was in big trouble, which was the vulnerability. And I'm just going, oh my God, I felt so this wave of overwhelmingness. How am I going to manage this responsibility that I've got when I don't even know what it is we're facing? And it really got the better of me. And as much as a man, a human being, a woman, whatever, we try hard to control it. It was pretty damn obvious I was in trouble. And suddenly all these thumbs started popping up on the Zoom meeting and messages started coming in saying, Jeff, we've got your back. Don't worry. We'll look after you. And I've got 400 people online and I was getting 400 thumbs up, 400 love hearts, 400, you know, support messages. And as much as I felt embarrassed, I then felt proud that I've got this team that when you look after them, be under no illusion, they will look after you. And that was that was the big lesson I learned, was what I shared with Mark. And since then, my world and my life has changed. And we create an environment where it's okay to be vulnerable. And when people are vulnerable, everybody wants to help. It's a natural human reaction. The key is, you know, are you going to be authentically vulnerable? So that was my story of understanding the power of vulnerability.
What was it like, Jeff? Because you did share that with me, and it just, you had me at hello, and that just cemented it. When you're there, you're feeling disoriented, you're lost, you're there in front of everyone, and you started seeing the thumbs up that we're going to get through that. What was that experience like?
I remember it vividly like it was 20 seconds ago. And I was in trouble. I wasn't physically crying or sobbing, but I was clearly under emotional strain. And the thumbs up and all the hearts forced me to start crying. It was overwhelming. Whereas I'd managed to control it to the extent I could, although I was obviously showing I was in trouble, which I was happy to do at the time because I had no choice. But seeing the messages and the thumbs up pushed me over the edge, because it was like, oh my God, it was that. I'm going to get emotional talking about it now. It was an incredible feeling that I put that one incident, that one issue, that one action, that one event completely changed my life. I became a giant as a result of realizing that all this testosterone and ego and just a realization that ego is only here to protect us. It's our enemy. It's not our savior. It never will be. And when you can be that honest and open and vulnerable, you get the best out of everybody around you. And then you just live a happier life. It's really simple stuff.
You know, I want to share something, because one of my specialties when I was practicing was suicide prevention, especially amongst youth and teens. And one of the things when we do presentations, a friend of mine whose son died from suicide 5 years ago, he was 14, is that a lot of times children don't open up to their parents because they don't think their parents will support them emotionally. And it's because many children don't realize that, you know, you've heard of the four love languages. Here are the five teenager languages: complaining, blaming, excuses, threats, moody. Complaining, blaming, excuses, threats, moody. And that triggers parents. And so a lot of children underneath it are in deep pain, but they don't believe that their parents will be there. And what the teenagers don't realize is that they've triggered their parents to be reactive. Whereas when parents can really open up and say, you want to know what's happening, Mom? You want to know what's happening, Dad? I think I might be crazy. Mm-hmm. You know,
that works as long as parents are emotionally intelligent enough to work with them. But in a place where the parents aren't able to respond in that way, what would they do, Mark? You've talked about this before, and I'm just thinking, say the parents are not open, say the parents, they don't have that emotional intelligence, they don't get it. What could be done in that case? What would the child do?
Well, it's very chancy. I think I may have shared on previous episodes, I'm not sure if I shared it with you, Jeff, on your podcast, but my father was a very tough, critical, could be even verbally abusive. I saw that with one of my brothers, and I had to tell him that I was dropping out of medical school. And he said, "What'd you do, flunk out?" And I wasn't flunking out. And then I shared, "No, I'm just not able to take the information in. I'm highlighting my entire books in yellow, hoping that I could take it in." And like you, Jeff, I'm not a reader. I'm not a reader. I'm more of a listener than a reader. And there's a point at which he's convincing me, well, if you're passing things, then this is ridiculous. You're going to stay there. And I'm thinking to myself, and he's kind of pummeling me. And then I look away, I look down, and I'm thinking to myself, if I go back, something bad's going to happen. I didn't know exactly, but it wasn't going to be something bad towards someone else. And everyone was afraid of my dad. He worked for a boss who was really kind of a real positive person. And my dad was the person who fired people. He was fair, but he was rough. And I remember he saying, "So we're agreed. You're not going to drop out if you're passing everything." And it was a big chance. And I looked up at him and I looked into his eyes, like I'm looking into both your eyes as I look into the camera. And I said, "You don't seem to get it. I'm afraid." And I just stared at him. Took a chance. He could have said, "That's nonsense. You're such a weakling." And if he did that, I don't know what would have happened. But I just stared at him, started crying. And he looked down, clenched his fists. He wasn't angry at me. He didn't know what to do. And he said, "We'll do what you need to do. We'll try and help you through this." It was the most powerful moment of my entire life. And it changed our relationship, because I think it demonstrated to him courage that he didn't have. So I don't know what to tell you, JJ. And if you'd open up to your parents, but there can't be one scintilla of faking it. Because what happened is I started making excuses. And when I was making excuses, he escalated. "Well, that's nonsense." And there was a point at which I was done. And I just looked at him. And to me, that was the most powerful and the most vulnerable moment of my life.
Yeah, it is interesting. It is about that authenticity, that genuine emotion and genuine feeling and thought all coming out and being expressed at the same time. And then not being any undercurrent, which is always picked up, isn't it? Any kind of undercurrent of faking it, or, you know, just kind of smoothing out the rough patches that you don't want to be revealed, that's always picked up, and it ruins it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's the things you learn in life, and sometimes you stumble across it. And I would argue Mark, that you stumbled across the power of that honesty, because in another environment, you might have gone, God, if I cry in front of my dad and say I'm scared, he'll judge me and the relationship will get worse. So you're taking a risk on how he's going to react to that. But sometimes you say, I've got to surface the problem, I've got to understand. And I think one thing I learned as a kid, there was a problem I was having at the time. I had anger issues when I was very young, up until the age of 9 or 10, when my father took me to karate to learn discipline, which he did very well. But I'll never forget saying to my mum, look, I need to have a really sensitive conversation with you, and I don't know how to have it.
Mm.
Which immediately meant she then took control of the conversation in a caring, relaxing way, because she now, that was a message to her that said I had a problem. And I didn't have to tell the problem. I didn't have to sort of say to her, look, I want to judge the fact that you're not cooking me nice meals, or you're aggressive to me when I come home from school, or whatever, none of which was ever true. But the point was, all I had to say was, I need to have a conversation with you that I'm really worried about. And that was it. All the barriers came down, and she's prepared to have that conversation. And they're the things that we're not taught. We're not taught those things. No. We have to second guess them, or we have to hope that what we're doing is right. And others will say, I need to come in like strong and like, me and you, we've got a problem. Well, that's unfortunately not going to get any better, right? So, because we're not taught these things. And this is where the education system, the emotional intelligence system, is flawed. We're not taught how to engage and have difficult conversations.
So true. Well, hold that thought, because we'll have another short break right now. But we will be back right after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More, here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. And I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist. I'm here with Dr. Mark Goulston and our guest today, Jeff Dewing. And Mark, I think you wanted to talk a little bit more about this whole thing of vulnerability and parents, and how kids and parents, you know, really sometimes have a real struggle connecting and feeling that, or showing that vulnerability.
Yeah, what I'd share with you, and I think I've shared it with you on other shows, and I'm not sure, Jeff, if I shared it when I was on your show. I collect quotes. And, there's one quote that blew all the other quotes off the table, and it was from a Dr. Shawnee Duperron, and she co-founded Project Forgive with Desmond Tutu. And the quote was, and it was nominated for a Nobel Prize. It didn't get it. And the quote was, forgiveness is accepting the apology you will never receive.
Exactly. Love it. You have shared that with me before. Absolutely love it.
And I brought it up to JJ because we were talking about parents and whatnot. And I shared with her that when I heard that quote, I applied it to my father, who could be very critical of me, and especially critical of one of my older brothers, who's still, I think, traumatized by it. And when I heard it, I imagined him saying this to my brothers and me. Remember when I was critical of you and I was even verbally abusive? I was scared. I was scared. I didn't know if I could provide for you. I didn't like being scared. I didn't like feeling like I was less than all the other fathers and whatever. And when I was scared, it didn't come out as fear. It came out as anger. It came out as criticism. I think I jumped on you because, you know, I had to support all of you. And if I couldn't support all of you, I would have been less of a dad than the other dads. And I'm sorry. In fact, what the three of you, my two brothers and I, what the three of you have done with your families and your lives is remarkable. You know, no thanks to me. And I don't deserve you as my sons, and I'm sorry. And what I realized is there was two parts to the apology, because I think down deep, that was true. He died 28 years ago, and I wanted that to be true, so I didn't care because I wanted to let go of something. And then when I took it in and I accepted it, I apologized to him. I pulled over to the side of the road and I said, you know, I owe you an apology. You know, I'm the psychiatrist in the family. I should know a little bit about this stuff. And I think I held a grudge against you. I think I used you as an excuse. And I should have known that what drove you was fear. You weren't evil. Yeah, you could have certainly improved. But and I'm sorry. And I can say the six words that I've always wanted to say, but I couldn't. I miss you. I love you. So I just wanted to share that, and I brought it up because, you know, JJ's been sharing and questioning, well, what if you can't do that, and both your parents are gone, and you'd mentioned, and you've mentioned on other shows that, you know, your mom was, you know, kind of narcissistic into herself, but it's not for her benefit.
Oh yeah,
it's no. To let go of the pain on whatever side of your body you're not supposed to feel it or something.
Exactly. Well, exactly. And, you know, rationally, I understand that however she was, it wasn't her fault. There's no fault. There's no blame. And she wasn't unloving, but she just wasn't as supportive as she might have been, let's just say. And, you know, very often, even if she paid a compliment, it never quite landed. There was, you know, there wasn't the energy behind it to have it land. You know, it wasn't the worst, but it was lacking, if you know what I mean. And so, yeah, I mean, to go through that process would be a good thing to do. I absolutely agree. And, I was saying in the break that I'd actually recently, we've talked about Ho'oponopono, the Hawaiian healing prayer, before on this show, and I've maybe talked about it on my other show. And it's a wonderful release you don't even have to ask you're asking for forgiveness, but you don't have to ask for an apology from anybody or even yourself. And it's very simple. You just focus on what it is that's not quite right or not working or something that you regret or somebody who you wish had been other. And you say, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And it's as simple as that. And the release that you get from that and the changes that come around from that are quite profound. And if you do it regularly, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. I want to shift back to Jeff, but I want to throw something into the mix because, you know, I do that. When I think what it releases is the hurt, the fear, and the anger that you felt towards her. And the anger is the armor against feeling the hurt and fear. And I think by doing that and letting yourself feel it, maybe it helped to release it, but you and I can talk offline and we do therapy with each other. But Jeff, what do you think of all this psychobabble?
So I don't call it psychobabble. I call it life. And I think there's a few examples I've got, not quite as involved, but I guess it's the one thing I've learned now. I practiced it when I was much younger, but didn't realize what I was practicing. But it was that famous thing I love, which is Stephen Covey's statement, which is first seek to understand, then seek to be understood. And my father, who I absolutely idolized, who I lost 6 years ago, he was absolutely my breath and my oxygen. He was a very shy guy, and he used to play keyboards, and he was an electronics engineer, and he was always focused on what he'd done. And I could go and see my parents on a Sunday afternoon. I'd walk in with my wife and say, I love my mum, and she'd reach out and cuddle us, and it's great. And I'd go into the front room to speak to my dad, who might be on the keyboards, just tampering about. And I'd say, afternoon, Dad. And he'd completely ignore me. I'd say, Dad, afternoon. He'd completely ignore me. And my wife would say to me, Jeff, how do you tolerate that? Does that not anger you? I went, no, because that's my dad. That's what he does. So on the third time, I don't say dad and get angry as if to say, you owe me. You know, I'd walk up to him and I'd just throw my arms around and say, hello, dad. and he could ignore me. And he said, hello, son. I had to help him get past his own shyness and his own challenges, right? Because first seek to understand. That was who he was. That's how he dealt with it. He didn't know any other way. So give him another way. It was really simple stuff. Whereas there'll be people that sit and say, no, you should demand this. You know, no, you don't demand. You help everybody, right? If they've got a stumbling block or a barrier or a blockade, just help them unlock the blockade. And it cost me nothing to then walk up to him. I didn't get angry because he ignored me for the first two times. I understood why other people got angry, but that's ego. So let it go, right? Just go and give him a cuddle and he can't ignore you. And that's how I broke the ice, which is why we never, ever had a problem communicating, because I knew there were certain things I had to do that didn't cost me any time, effort or money. Therefore, why not do them? And it's just all about how you approach whatever the problem is. And the other thing I love to say to people, and I say it all the time, you have to travel a long way to find a bad person. But you don't have to travel very far to find a good person in a bad environment. And you need, when you understand that, you realize that this is worth my investment, a cuddle, a talk, a chat, an acceptance, whatever it is. And back to the saying, you know, it's forgiveness, knowing that you're not going to receive the apology you thought you was going to get. And it doesn't matter, right? As long as those people feel comfortable and safe in their environment, they will be their best selves. How do you create that environment?
I love that.
I want to ask you, Jeff, because in that moment when you went over and hugged him and he said, oh, hello, son. So it must have occurred to you, it's not that he doesn't want to be close. He doesn't know how to.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's exactly it. And my father, as much as I loved him dearly, and he would die and he would take a bullet for any of us, he couldn't cuddle you. He couldn't walk up and kiss you. He couldn't do any of those things. And that's okay. So guess what? I'm going to do it for you. And he responded. But he just couldn't make that move. But what he also gave me was he gave me the knowledge and the feeling that how important it was to do those things. And when I say to people, from the age of 8 years old to the age of 28 years old, I was shy and I couldn't bear to be in a room with people I didn't know. It would destroy me. And the knowledge and the information and the wisdom he taught me was what I knew was important. Therefore, I was going to break my back to walk up to people and give them a cuddle and give them a kiss and say, how you doing? So he gave me all that wisdom, whereas I might not have otherwise had the benefit of that. And I think that's where relationships really, really take off, because, you know, of all the things you see and you do and you think, oh, that was a bad boss or that was a bad environment or that was a bad company, or what you're doing is you're learning every single minute of every single day about how you want to improve that or improve it and get it better and change it. And they're the things that's why when we're parents, as you said yourself, Mark, if you've got a father that was behaving the way you suggest he was behaving, you're being taught how you don't want to behave. So you execute that during your own life, right?
One of the messages I'm getting from this is that, and I hope you're getting it, is that think of the people in your life that you're maybe holding a grudge against. And if you drill down, is it because they want to act that way or they don't know how to act differently? You know, and if you can think they don't know any better. And I think what Jeff is sharing with us is, you know, you can teach them better. And there's something very powerful about actually giving them a hug. There's something about that skin to skin, friendly and without holding back. And you might be able to open some of these people up and let go of some of your grudges.
And I think it is very important as well for older people, because that was one of the things I noticed with my mother. If I hadn't been living with her and giving her a hug on a daily basis, she wouldn't have been getting any, especially when lockdown started during the pandemic. She passed away shortly after the beginning of that. She wouldn't have been getting any real loving touch other than from her carers. And, you know, it's so important, isn't it? And yeah, how she was and how she behaved wasn't anything that she, you know, she didn't know how to be any other way. And so it's very easy to forget that. And of course, when you're growing up, you know, you harbor resentments and all that sort of stuff. But there is, you know, that's one of the benefits. And that was one of the beautiful things about being able to be with her in her last years, was that I could, you know, give her a hug and say, I love you, and hear her say that to me. And we both meant it. And it meant such a lot.
I think so. If you might be on the underground, you might see somebody misbehaving or swearing or whatever, and everybody will be judging them on that bit of behaviour.
Yeah.
And the bit I love is the ability to say, there's something else going on here. It's not about that. There's something else going on. And if I cared enough, I'd find out about it and get involved in it. If I don't care, then I'm going to judge and walk away. Well, don't ever judge. If you're going to judge, then take the time to actually understand why. And it's back to, you know, it's back to the, my dad or any other environment. You know, I was curious as to why he felt that way. And he was just incredibly, incredibly shy. And he could never make that first move. So therefore, I'll make the first move for you. It's really simple stuff. And but then you get the ego kicks in, which is your world's, you know, the world's biggest enemy, which says, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it first. He should do it first. He's the father. He's the... What is all that about? Just go up and give him a cuddle. It costs nothing. Yet it breaks down all the barriers. And you live a happier life. And you hurt less, as you say, right? Because it's, I don't allow it to hurt me. I use that hurt to energize me to create the outcomes that we all want. And of course, I'm sure, bless him, when he went to his final rest, I'd love to think that he'll be sitting there thanking me for those moments.
That would be wonderful, wouldn't it? It would be wonderful. And unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the show. Your book again, Jeff, is Doing the Opposite, something I've done quite a lot of in my life, doing the opposite of what everybody else is doing. So I do recommend people go out and buy that. Thank you very much for being on the show, Mark. Any last thoughts? It's been great to have Jeff, hasn't it?
He's been terrific. I like what he said. One of his last comments was, you know, when someone can't do something, do it for them. You know, bridge the gap. You know, if they don't know how to give a hug because they're so shy, it doesn't mean that they don't want one and need one. So do it for them. I thought everything you said was wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, so did I. Thank you. And hopefully any of you listening, everybody listening will have found the same. And if you have enjoyed today's show, do join us again for more Hurt Less, Live More here on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast. But for now, until next time, it's goodbye from me, JJ. It's goodbye from Mark. And it's goodbye from our guest this week, Jeff Dewing. Goodbye.